Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 75, The Eternal Night. I am your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hello.
We are back, of course, to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We're going to have some new game impressions to share, and we've also got our end of the year awards roundup. We'll be talking about the best games of 2016, and that's going to be this week's big topic. But before we get into any of that stuff, let's kick it off with some news. Specifically, we've got some Switch news to discuss, thanks to Nintendo's patent application filings that were revealed last week. Now, we sort of have a bit of perhaps confirmation about some of the features that are going to be included in this device. Now, some of these things were rumored before, and of course, because it is just a patent application filing, it means that not all of these features are necessarily going to be in the final product, but it's still kind of exciting and interesting to see what's likely to be in there.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre that we're getting this information from a patent filing and not from Nintendo, from a press release or something. It's just bizarre. But that's how Nintendo works. They don't care. They just don't care.
Well, they've got their big event coming up on the 12th of January, and they'll confirm everything then. I mean, they had to be aware that this thing was coming out. But I can understand why they're just waiting for their event instead of doing it via press release. But what we're learning is that it seems pretty certain that the device will have capacitive touch. And it also seems very likely that it's going to have motion and gesture controls, because according to this application and the diagrams, it will have an accelerometer and an angular velocity sensor, as well as an IR camera, all of which point to that feature.
Yeah, and I think some people would say, like, oh, well, so what? Like, who cares? More motion games, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm excited about is this opens the door to possible backwards compatibility. So maybe I could play some old Wii games with this controller. Wii and Wii U.
Yeah, that's very, very possible. Also, I just love the fact that it has, you know, all of these features and possibilities in there. Regular old core gaming is my favorite, and I think that's probably always going to be best. But having the ability to also have motion and also have touch, I think, is a really big deal. Especially for, you know, if you're just going to take the the core system out and maybe not bring your Joy-Cons with you, and you would still want to be able to play something on the go.
Yep.
It's great to have that knowledge that you'll be able to do something with just a touch screen if you want to do something that's really, really simple. So I was expecting that, you know, all those features would be in there, since it is something that Nintendo has kind of pioneered, and so I'm glad to see this semi-confirming those rumors. The application also talks about inner L and inner R buttons on the Joy-Cons, which people were pretty sure was in there from scrutinizing the reveal trailer and those initial screenshots from when the Switch was first shown off.
Yeah.
I don't think we talked about it before, but I know it had been rumored. And I'm also not sure if we had discussed the rumor about the mystery button being a record button that is used for taking screenshots.
No, I didn't expect that, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that Nintendo has made sort of a big part of Wii U and 3DS recently with their Miiverse stuff. And just having a built-in screenshot button for that does make sense. It doesn't sound like it's going to do video, at least according to the patent application. But in the final hardware, who knows, maybe it'll do that too. Also, of course, it talks about alternate Joy-Cons, which is something that Nintendo, you know, hasn't shown yet, but of course we're all expecting. You know, it talks about having a control pad, you know, aka a D-pad, instead of, you know, the buttons on the left one. So that's one example. But it says there's no limitations to the button configurations you can have. So this does indeed point to a variety of game-specific accessories, as we've all been expecting.
Yeah.
But again, it's just nice to see this in some official documentation. On the other hand, there has also been a bit of a spec leak, and it's not all rainbows and sunshine.
Yeah, so how did this leak?
I'm not actually sure where it originated, and I'm not 100% sure of what it means. But Scott, since you're kind of a tech and specs guy, what's your take on it? What's your interpretation?
Yeah, I read into it just because I expected this thing to be underpowered. So it's running an NVIDIA Tegra, I believe it's an X1 processor, and that's actually a generation now behind, because NVIDIA
I was
now
expecting
has
it to be X2.
Tegra X2. So it's an older generation Tegra. I think the clock speed on it is like a gigahertz, you know, at its best. What we've found from this leak is it's likely that when the Switch is being played in handheld mode, they have to dial the clock speed back. And this is mostly because it would be a very power-hungry thing to be running this chip at a high clock speed.
Yeah, the problem is that it would use batteries really fast, and it would get hot really fast. You know, I remember when they first revealed Switch, you were thinking maybe there was going to be some sort of built-in additional hardware in the dock so it could become more powerful when it was docked.
Yeah.
But that's not
It's not quite. It's the opposite, actually, which is when it's in handheld mode, it's gimped.
Yes, when it's not docked, they make it run slower.
That's right.
So it doesn't consume batteries and doesn't get as hot.
That's right.
So, I mean, I guess on one hand, that's kind of good. You get an enhanced experience when you're plugged in and watching it on your TV and you know, playing it as a console. But on the other, it's like the whole thing just seems kind of a little underpowered.
It's super.
Maybe a lot underpowered.
Super. It is underpowered. You know, it's like a two-year-old Android tablet.
I mean, I wasn't expecting this thing to be, you know, PlayStation 4 or Xbox One powerful, especially compared to the new enhanced versions of those systems. But I did think it would be faster than a Wii U, and it's not.
Well, it should be better. It should be a little better than a Wii U at this point.
Well, I mean, it doesn't. I know the speed doesn't tell the whole story, but as far as pure speed goes, it actually is slower, right?
The clock speed may be slower, but I don't believe. I think the fact that the graphics processor is better than the Wii U will make up for it.
Right, right. As I was saying, it doesn't tell the whole story just by those sheer numbers.
And in handheld mode, it's only running at 720p. Mm-hmm. So even though it's gimped, but the resolution is a quarter of a 1080p screen. So it doesn't have to do as much work. So even though the thing's running at a slower clock speed, it still should be capable of some gorgeous, gorgeous graphics.
Okay.
What's troubling for me is the developers have to now possibly code their game for two kinds of experiences. One, this docked 1080p mode, which, by the way, is four times the resolution of 720p. Or they code their game for this handheld experience at 720p. And then they don't bother worrying about, you know, the 1080p experience. They could just scale everything up. And then you've got a game built for the handheld that works just fine in docked mode, but it's not going to look better after you plug it in. Not that it won't have razor sharp pixels and vectors and such, but the issues could be with the textures, could be being scaled up. And to make textures work on a 720p screen and then to make another set of textures in this 1080p mode, maybe it's not worth the trouble. And maybe the frame rate on the handheld version is going to be the same frame rate as in the docked version so that they don't have to code two versions of their game. So if it's gimped for the handheld version, then when you plug the thing into the screen, into your big TV, you could be looking at a game that doesn't have any improvement over the handheld experience.
I suppose so. Although I'm hopeful that Nintendo's got some sort of system in place or some middleware or something like that to ease with this transition and not just throw it all at the developers' feet and say, okay, third parties, you got to figure this out on your own. Because I trust what Nintendo's going to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the third parties where I'd be worried.
Yeah. It's not quite as bad as having to make two games, but you're asking a lot, especially of indie developers who don't have the resources to make two different versions of their game for one console. So, yeah, it's asking a lot. And it's unfortunate that the handheld experience isn't going to be the same as the big screen experience.
Well, it might be in a lot of cases, but
that's true. It could be, but yeah. So, yeah, that's unfortunate. I am not surprised. I expected this device to be underpowered. I expected something on par with a Wii U, but with this new form factor. So it's not going to compete with a PS4 Pro. It's not going to with an Xbox One. So developers who are making the next, I don't know, Destiny or their next Uncharted or the next Assassin's Creed are going to probably not give us those AAA titles that the other consoles are getting. Hopefully, the benefits of the Switch outweigh the negatives here, and developers see that, oh my gosh, portable Skyrim, who wouldn't want that? So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if that teaser of Skyrim was any indication, you know, it'll still be able to be, you know, very, very capable.
For sure. But
as they say, the proof is in the pudding, and we will see all the pudding and taste all the pudding in January. And, you know, if we see all these games and they look amazing and they're running smoothly in both handheld and docked form, and we're like, okay, obviously Nintendo knows something more than just these raw specs reveal, then we'll all be very happy.
Yeah.
But it is a little disconcerting.
And the thing is, Nintendo hasn't been about specs for many, many years, going on 20
years.
Right,
I mean, they haven't even really ever... Did they ever actually officially reveal the specs for Wii? I don't think they did.
I don't think they did. I think people had to open it up and see what was inside to actually see the specs. So I think that you shouldn't worry. You know, we're going to get some wonderful games out of this console. And it's more about the games and less about what the clock speed of the chip is.
Right, totally.
But it is a little worrying when it comes to third-party developers and what they're going to do with this console now that, you know, hey, maybe you can't put Fallout 5 on this device because they're not going to worry about, you know, oh, well, the experience on the PS4 Pro is this awesome 4K experience, and now we're going to have to gimp our game for this super underpowered handheld device. So you're not going to see Fallout 5 on the 3DS. I doubt you're going to see Fallout 5 on the Switch.
So it seems. Of course, if you are eager to see the Switch in person and try it out, good news on that front at least. Nintendo has announced that there is a Switch tour coming to several major North American cities in the first quarter of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the big unveiling event happens on January 12th, and then there will be these tour events starting with New York, January 13th to 15th, Toronto, January 27th to 29th, Washington, D.C., February 10th to 12th, Chicago, February 17th to 19th, San Francisco, February 24th to 26th, and then Los Angeles, March 3rd to 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 2 days of these tour events are going to be invite only, but the third day is going to be open to the general public. And I guess you'll have to sign up or line up or something. Details are still coming. But for those first 2 days, I guess they're sending out invites to people who are members of My Nintendo. And you'll be able to get invited that way.
Mm-hmm. And I think this speaks a lot to their confidence in this console, that they're going to let average Joes get their hands on this before it releases.
True, true.
Everyone's a critic. Everyone has a Twitter account. Everyone has a blog or a Facebook. And if you get your hands on this and you hate it, you're going to be very vocal about it. And if you get your hands on it and you love it, you're probably going to be as vocal, if not more. So I think that they're pretty confident that it's going to be received well, and I don't necessarily even think you need to show up to know if it's good or not. You're going to know instantly online how people are reacting to it.
Yeah, totally. One way or the other, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing it in person.
Me too.
That's the big news for the week. Let's move along to some game impressions. Of course, Super Mario Run is now out. We talked about it a little bit last week. But, you know, now it's out for everyone to enjoy. I've been playing it. Scott, you've been playing it more.
I have.
What are your further thoughts now that you've been able to sink your teeth into the final game?
I think what Nintendo did was very brave, but also they they kind of botched it a little bit.
You think so, huh? Because I think the game looks great. I think the levels are really well designed.
Oh, I think the game is spectacular. I love this game, and I've been playing
it
a lot.
And I certainly didn't notice any lag in the controls like you were talking about last week.
No, I think I've gotten over the fact that if I touch the screen, Mario doesn't jump, like, literally within less than a millisecond of my finger pressing down on the screen.
I think you're just drunk.
I think I'm feeling a delay, and it's still there in this version of the game, but
I'm not.
Here's where Nintendo screwed up. They released this as a demo where...
Yeah, it's released as a demo, after you play those first three levels, then you pay for the...
Games aren't made that way anymore. Not mobile games aren't made that way anymore. So people expected this game to be free to play, and then if I want to pay, I don't know, for in-app little things, then I can build a little town. Or I think people expected if I play this every day for 20 minutes, I'll unlock all the levels. Or I could just pay $4.99 up front, and it'll unlock all the levels and give me all the coins. But if I play it enough, the game will reward me, and it will unlock the levels, and I can play all
the levels. Well, if people think that, then they weren't paying attention, because Nintendo has said from the beginning this was going to be a premium experience. You weren't going to have microtransactions. They weren't going to try to rip you off by charging you more for in-game currency or power-ups or extra lives or have to wait for time or anything like that, and that's what we got.
That's not how the platform works. That's not how...
But that's what they promised since the beginning. So to expect anything else, I think, is crazy. And I think it's a much better experience for
Yes, for Nintendo fans, but not for people who own iPhones.
Well, I think people who own iPhones need to buck up a little bit and realize that they are paying for crap.
They're not gonna.
They're getting crap games that are inferior experiences. Yeah. If you want an actual good experience, you know, be prepared to pay crazy amounts of money, like $10.
People don't realize that over the course of a year, you're gonna put $20 into this thing. And you'll have the same experience as if you front-loaded it with $10 and have gotten, you know, instead of paying $1 every month to recharge your coins or whatever. Mm-hmm. But people would much rather pay $1 a month and recharge coins or play the 10 minutes a day that the game allows you to, and then the rest period will restore the coins, you can play more. That's the way the mobile world works.
Well, that's the way the mobile world is, but in general, it's a vastly inferior experience.
It is, but that's what people expect, and Nintendo should have engineered towards that instead of trying to...
I disagree.
They've failed miserably because...
They haven't failed. They've made millions and millions of dollars.
They have not made nearly as many millions as they could have if they had released this as a free-to-play game where you pay for microtransactions in the game.
Terrible idea. Worst
idea, but it's what makes the most money, and it's what people expect. And if you look at the reviews right now, it's hovering around like 2 stars for this game.
Well, yes, people are crapping all over it because they expect to get a free game. But, you know, like I said, if you want a good game, you should have to pay for it.
I completely agree.
And if Nintendo did make it that way, it would be the race to the bottom, and they would be out of business, and we would not get Nintendo games anymore.
I don't think so. I think they could have made this game spectacular by making it free to play. The way it works should have been $10 to unlock everything, but I can play for free, and if I'm okay with every time I lose 3 lives, I have to wait, you know, 4 hours or whatever to build up enough coins to take another try at the game. And if I collect a pink coin, then I can unlock the next level or something like that. So it should have still been free to play. I should be able to play this whole game all the way through if I have the patience of a saint. And not everyone has that amount of patience. And there are many people like me who would just gladly pay $10 up front and remove all the barriers to all the levels. But there are so many more people out there who would much rather play this game in short spurts because they don't want to put money out, but they'll get addicted. It's a wonderful game, and Nintendo's not giving them a chance to get addicted to it. There's just not enough here in the first 3.5 levels that you can play to get me to commit to $10.
Well, somebody needs to encourage mobile players to pay for good games. I don't think Nintendo should change the way that they do things just because the market is in such miserable condition that everybody feels entitled to getting everything for free.
Well, they're not going to make as much money as they could have. And unfortunately, the next one, it's going to have to, the pendulum's going to swing in the exact opposite direction because the shareholders aren't happy. The people who reviewed this game on the iTunes store or the App Store are unhappy.
As far as I'm concerned, the investors can go choke on a fire flower. What Nintendo is doing might not be best for investors, but I think selling it this way is best for gamers, and it probably is best for showing that there is value in their IP. And I think as far as the long-term game goes and showing that there is value in Nintendo's brands, I think they're probably doing the right thing.
Well, this game is not going to be at the top of the App Store in a week. It's not.
I'm much more concerned about whether it's a good experience or not. And, you know, as far as mobile games go, it's pretty good.
I want Nintendo to succeed. It's a great game. It's a great game. I love it. I've been playing every level all the way through, like, 30-40 times because I want to get the black coins now, and it's an obsession now.
So you're way more into it than I am, it seems.
You can play this game all and the other unfortunate thing is a lot of people will unlock the game and they'll just play each level all the way through collecting, you know, one or two pink coins, and then they'll get to the end of the game, and you can play this game all the way through in maybe, I don't know, an hour and a half.
Probably less than that.
Yeah, probably less than that. But the thing is, you're not getting really what Nintendo hoped you would by collecting all the pink coins and then collecting all the purple coins and then collecting all the black coins. That's where there's value.
What they want you to do is then play this Toad Rally over and over again, get the applause.
And I'm enjoying the Toad Rally as well.
And then you can unlock stuff for your building mode.
Yep.
And, you know, that's where there would normally be like microtransactions. Oh, you can't do this here. You can just, you know, pay to unlock all these parts and unlock these coins, unlock these toads and whatnot. But they don't do that.
Yeah.
You're enjoying that mode, huh?
I am. I like it. Unfortunately, making friends within this game is kind of pointless. I can see their scores, but it's not like I can race against you in the Toad Rally mode. Mm-hmm. So that's silly. But I don't really understand their thought process behind forcing people to, you know, create a Nintendo account to store their information. It's just very awkward. It's like they just can't get mobile right. Even with DNA's help, I bet somebody, some bean counter at Nintendo HQ is telling somebody else at DNA, you need to sign up for a Nintendo account before you play the game. It's just a lot of stodgy old thinking in this mobile game, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't know why that's there, really. And I haven't shared my friend code with anyone because as far as I can tell, there's no benefit.
No,
to
there's
it,
zero so. Benefit. And that's also very puzzling. It's just confusing. It was also kind of broken, the friending situation. It's weird. I don't think Nintendo is letting DNA do what they do best, which is make really wonderful mobile games. They're pushing a lot of their agenda down DNA's throat, and that's how we wound up with Super Mario Run in the way it currently works.
Well, I'd say it's better than any previous DNA game.
I think
I've
it's
played,
one of the
so.
Best mobile games I've ever played, and I'm still saying this. So
now, what about the always online feature in quotes? What do you think about? Has it been a problem for you?
Yeah, no, it hasn't been a problem for me, but it's a problem not for me. It's a problem for anyone who goes on a train ride, gets on an airplane, goes on the subway underground for 20 minutes and wants to play a game on their mobile phone. If it doesn't have an active internet connection, it doesn't let you play.
You know, I was expecting to say the same thing, and I took a BART ride into the city a couple days ago, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to play Mario Run and see how this affects the experience. And surprisingly, it actually didn't crap out on me at all. It actually worked just fine.
That's because there are mobile cell connections underneath the bay there. We're spoiled here in the Bay Area.
Well, maybe so. At any rate, it wasn't nearly as bad as I was expecting. So
don't try it in New York City or any other major metropolitan area. You will lose your internet connection. You won't be able to play. Same thing if you take it on a plane, which is really sad.
Well, that's true.
But it hasn't limited me yet. I haven't gone underground or in a plane where I didn't have access to mobile service. But if I lived out in the middle of nowhere, or if my parents didn't want me to have internet access on my mobile device because I'm a 8-year-old, then you can't play this game.
Well, I tried to break it, but I couldn't.
You didn't try hard enough.
I guess not.
So yeah, that's also very short-sighted. That was another anti-piracy maneuver that, you know, is silly.
Yeah, I mean, even though it didn't affect me, it just seems really, really pointless to
it
have
is.
It in there.
People who are going to pirate this game are going to pirate your game. It's not about preventing people from stealing your game. It's about making the game as accessible to as many people as possible and increasing your revenue.
Well, for me, the bottom line is it worth your $10?
Yes.
And for me, I would say yes, absolutely. I mean, it's certainly not my favorite game. I don't think it's as good as a regular Mario game, but I would say it is better than 99.9% of mobile offerings. I do not regret parting with my $10, and I recommend it to anybody who has an iOS device.
Me too. It's a lot of fun. My heart is racing as I'm tapping the screen, hoping to get that final coin that I missed the 8 times previously.
Yeah,
I think it's great. It's a lot of memorization, surprisingly. You're like, oh, where
yeah,
was
true.
That coin? Where do I get? So, because if you're not in it to collect these hard to get coins, you're not really playing this game the way that Nintendo intended. You could play through it in an hour. But yeah, great game.
Well, moving on from there, I'd like to share my further impressions of Shantae Half Genie Hero. And unlike Super Mario Run, I have nothing but good things to say about Shantae, which, is officially now out and available in the eShop on Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been playing it on and off for the past week, and it just keeps getting better and better. It is absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the best-looking games I've played on Nintendo system in recent memory. There are some games that have really high-res 2D art, and they don't have the animation to match, but that is certainly not a problem in this game. WayForward's animation is second to none,
mm-hmm.
and so both the graphics and the animation look great. Controls are fantastic. The music is great. Some of the music reminds me of Mega Man. And in fact, one of the levels even reminds me of Mega Man a bit, with these lasers shooting down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like the Quick Man stage a little bit, but not nearly as difficult or anything like that. But it really makes me want to see WayForward make a Mega Man game now. I still believe that it's more of an action game this time out, as each level really does just feel like an action platforming stage. And then each level is sort of broken up by these fetch quests that require you to go to previous areas and do exploration. And so that adds a lot of variety, and it does slow the pace down, but it makes the game feel meatier, and I never felt like, oh man, I have to go back here, what a pain. It's always fun to do the exploration. I was surprised at the number of cool transformations you can get. I thought you'd only have 4 or 8, and it's like, oh, I'm up to 12 already. Wow, that's pretty cool. So lots of powers to add to these transformations. They start out pretty basic, but then you find more enhancements and it expands upon them, as it did in previous games. But finding all that stuff and learning how to best use them is really cool. And, you know, just being able to make clever use of all these abilities becomes lots and lots of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the levels change when you return to them. When you go back to do this exploration, it's not the exact same level as before. It changes visually, the enemies change, and that helps add a lot of variety to the experience as well. So,
do you have a favorite power-up? Like, is there... I saw that she turns into, like, a monkey. Is it a lot of animal-based powers, or is it kind of all over the map?
It's usually animals. There's a monkey, an elephant,
mm-hmm.
Which are both in previous games. A mermaid, a spider, a bat. I mean, they all have very specific uses,
mm-hmm.
so I don't have a favorite or anything like that. But they're all very fun.
Yeah.
Maybe the blobfish. The blobfish has actually no function as far as I can tell so far. It just flops around on the screen. But it is a disgusting blobfish, so it might be that
yeah.
one. Anyway, the game is really great, and it's highly recommended. And guess what? I have a code to give away to our listeners.
Oh, sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah, so if you are interested in getting this game on Wii U, just send us a tweet to us, to at PowerProsPod. Make sure your message includes hashtag Shantae, and I will try to give this away to somebody on an episode come January.
Awesome. And speaking of giveaways, I put the final touches on our prize for at Lucio Tweets, which was a backlit Game Boy. He wanted it.
Oh, right.
He wanted a green backlight, which I haven't really done. I usually do either a white backlight or like a off-white backlight that's not as harsh as the white. And what you mm-hmm. find when you backlight a Game Boy is the pixels are blue. So you don't get that classic Game Boy feel from the Game Boy after you've backlit it, because you've got this white and blue screen, and it's very incongruous with your memory of these pea soup green pixels. So he wanted the green backlight to get the green pixels, and my gosh, is it green. But it kind of changed my mind about the appropriate color for a Game Boy backlight, and I may be doing more green ones in the future. So it came out awesome. It's in the mail on its way to Lucio right now. And if you didn't get to see it, I posted pictures on my Twitter.
Yeah, they're on the Power Pros Twitter as well.
Cool.
All right, let's take an intermission, and then when we come back, we will discuss our big topic, which is the best of 2016. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the traditional end of the year roundup, our list of the best games on Nintendo systems in 2016. We're going to start by going through each of our individual top five games on Wii U or 3DS, or mobile, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get into some categorical awards. But let's get this show on the road by discussing our number five games of 2016. I guess I'll start with mine.
Mm-hmm.
And my number five title is Axiom Verge on Wii U. To be honest, because this came out previously on PlayStation and other systems, mm-hmm. I almost forgot it came out this year,
yeah.
Steph. If it weren't for you reminding me, this might not have made the list. But I'm so happy you refreshed my memory because it is a fantastic, excellent Metroid-style adventure.
Mm-hmm.
It it's very retro in its appearance, but it's got great level design. It's got really creative, clever, unique power-ups. It's got a very different type of story, and it's just a heck of a lot of fun. There hasn't been a lot of great news for Metroid fans recently, but if you like that series, my gosh, don't hesitate. Go out and get Axiom Verge right away. It is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, what is your number five game?
It's a baby game. it's a Kirby Planet Robobot. I really like this.
Oh, it's a great game.
I loved it.
I wouldn't call it a baby game.
It's for children.
Well, it is, but it's for everyone, man.
It's for everyone, but it is very simple, but it's such a fun game to play through, and it is challenging when you're, trying 100% it.
Trying to get everything,
because I find myself finishing a level and saying, gosh, I got to go back and get the thing I missed.
Yep.
So I think it's super inventive. I love that, Kirby gets into this crazy robot suit and has all these.
Yeah, I love
awesome
the robot
powers.
Suit. I love the way the suit transforms just like Kirby mm-hmm. does. I love the shooter stages. Those are a heck of a
lot
of fun.
Yeah, the shooter stages are fun. I love jumping into the background and moving along and then coming back into the foreground and continuing through the level. And it's interesting, you'll play a level two or three times to get everything, and you'll find there's other ways through the level that you didn't, realize you could do. So I think it's challenging. It's not super challenging because it's like Super Mario Run. You could play through it in a handful of hours, but if you want to collect everything, good luck. A lot of fun. Totally worth $40, and I think it's on sale now for like 30. So yeah, definitely put that on your list.
Yeah, it's a great game. It didn't quite make my top five, but it was excruciating not being able to put it on there. I thought it was really, really good. I would say my favorite Kirby game of all time.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Moving on to my number four game, it is Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Mm.
I just mentioned that Kirby Planet Robobot was my favorite Kirby game, and I think that Sun and Moon is my all-time favorite Pokemon game.
Wow.
It's just a really, really well-made RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they add in enough new stuff to make it feel very distinct and very different. And especially if you haven't played Pokemon in a while, it's a great way to get back into it and be like, oh yeah, this isn't just going through the same motions I went through before. I found the story very interesting. I found the setting very interesting. I like the new Pokemon. I like the new Pokemon variations. I think that the new professor is hilarious. I'm really happy with my starter, Litten, who has turned into Incineroar and does his Z-move. The Z-moves are awesome, but his Z-move I especially like, where he pulls out a wrestling ring, throws that out there, and then does a crazy moonsault of death off the top to squash his opponent. It is ridiculous, and it is awesome. I've already put in more than 40 hours, and I'm really, really enjoying it. Excellent game.
Awesome. It's not a game I put on my list because I barely play it.
Understandable. What is your number four, though?
Mario & Luigi Paper Jam. And this game divided a lot of people because I know there's not a lot of love for Paper Mario as of late. But I love the Mario & Luigi games. I know this one really felt quite a bit different than previous Mario and Luigi games because of the addition of the Paper Mario type stuff. I just thought it was really inventive, the wacky tank style battles that you, these origami things happening constantly.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So just inventive, fun, funny. I think funny is key because surprisingly, this is one of the few Mario games that lives and dies by how good the story is. So I really enjoy it. And I love laughing while I play games. It's one a lot of people kind of skip this this generation, maybe, because it wasn't a typical Mario and Luigi game, but I love it.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty darn solid from what I played. So jumping over to my number three, you know, I'm a little hesitant to say this one because this game is so darn new, and I usually like to let these things, you know, percolate a little bit before I decide, oh, is it really one of the best of the year, or am I just so caught up in the fun that, you know, I my judgment is off? Anyway, I'm saying my number three game is Shantae Half Genie Hero. Mm. You know, just a little bit earlier in the show, I talked about all the things I loved about it, the graphics, the music, the action-heavy stages, the exploration, and of course, you know, I think I mentioned last week, I am indeed a backer, so you know, I hope I'm not coming across as biased or anything, but I do think it was an investment well spent. I think the game turned out beautifully. Mm-hmm. There's still more content on the way, and so far I am extremely happy with it. It's just very, very polished. It's way forward at their best. And hey, if you want to get it, send us a tweet. Enter the contest. Get a free code.
Awesome.
This isn't just a cheap plug. It really is my number three game of the year.
Awesome.
It's great.
Yeah.
What's yours?
Bravely Second, which if you're not playing the Bravely Default games, it's basically just Japanese RPG. It's the first Japanese RPG that I really, really, really got addicted to. Tons of job classes, job types. It did use the original's engine and reused a lot of the graphics, which I was surprised by, but of course it saved them a ton of money, I'm sure. But it felt fresh enough that I've been playing it for 60 hours.
Oh, wow.
Still haven't seen nearly as much as the game has to offer. So it's a great mm-hmm. game. Lot of value in there for the $40 that you're paying if you get into it. So yeah, I love it. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I really, really liked that game as well, and for a long time, it was also in my top five, but you know, for some reason, just some of the other titles on there, I've ended up spending a lot more time with, so I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. well, there must be some reason I spent, you know, 40 hours on this game, and I'm only 30 hours into Bravely Second, or maybe I'm only 20 hours in or something, but yeah. I have loved what I played so far. I think the characters are great. I love all the technique involved in battle. I know most of that stuff carry over from the first mm-hmm. Bravely Default game, but it's all, you know, really, really good. I'm very intrigued by the story. And yeah, so far, I completely agree. I'm having a ton of fun with it.
Awesome.
So on to my number two. I'm going with The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess HD. It's no secret that I'm a huge fan of Twilight Princess. I have been since it came out. I was involved with the strategy guide. I have played through it multiple times, and I am still not tired of it. I love almost everything about it. I like the visual style. I love the dungeons. I love the bosses. And I love all the stuff they add to this HD version. I'm very happy that it has both versions of the maps. By that, I mean that it's flipped when you're playing in hero mm-hmm. mode. You know, it has amiibo compatibility. You know, they tried to streamline some of those early quests a little bit. And all that adds up together to be an even better version of one of my favorite 3D Zelda games. So I am very, very happy with this title. And, you know, again, it's kind of like a cop-out saying, oh, the one of the best games of 2016 is a game that came out back in 2006.
Yeah,
but
10
so
years
what?
Old.
It's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I still love it, and I still highly recommend it. And, you know, I know it's not like the most popular Zelda game these days, but for me, you know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why it's on my list at number two as well. So,
oh, all right.
My only gripe with this game being on the Wii U is that it's very likely that we won't see them remake it again for the Switch, which unless they figure out a way to get, you know, this game to play on the Switch, maybe there's going to be some sort of eShop version that, you know, we can put on the Switch. But I really would love to have this in some sort of portable form.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
And so that's my only gripe. And I, you know, a Skyward Sword is great, but I would much rather have Twilight Princess on the
I don't know how you
Switch.
Do Skyward Sword on the...
Yeah, I don't know how you do it either.
On the go anyway. You got to raise up your arm and stuff. But I digress.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number one pick. I know this is not everyone's cup of tea, but for me, the game I was most enamored with this year was Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Spirit of Justice.
Oh, wow. All right. That's a surprise. Wow.
Yeah, I know it's one that you haven't played, but it's one that I was just, you know, super in love with. You know, I've always been a fan of the series, and in a lot of ways, this could be considered the best one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the stories have always been good, But this time, you know, the story is borderline epic. Like, the fate of, you know, millions of people is resting on your shoulders this time. It's like, how do you do that with a lawyer game? Mm-hmm. Well, they do it, and they do it great. You know, lots of really interesting characters, lots of interesting mysteries. And for a 3DS game, the production values were second to none. Looks great, sounds great, mm-hmm. good voice acting even. A very, very highly polished title. New features that add to the challenge. Returning features like you know, being able to explore your environments more fully. And especially the way it ends. That whole final chapter is just massive mm-hmm. and amazing. And you know, if you like a game of this type, where it's mostly about the story and the characters, and there's a lot of text, but then you get to expose the lies and unravel the mysteries, and of course you still get to yell objection into the microphone, which I love to do. You know, if that kind of thing floats your boat, then you know, you'll love this game as much as I do, I think. Mm-hmm. I assume it's a controversial pick, but that is my number one title. And I think I have a guess as to what your number one is, too. It might be a little controversial as well, huh?
It is very controversial. I originally was going to put the NES Classic Edition in there at number one because it's possible I put more hours into the NES Classic Edition than I did into my number one Wii U game that I put on this list here. So okay. I put Paper Mario Color Splash as number one. Uh-huh. I feel very guilty about doing that, too, because I know how much it angered and upset fans of the Paper Mario series.
Well, just because it's not the same Thousand Year Door doesn't mean it's still not a good game in its own
right. You have to be okay with the fact that it's not an RPG. It's a, mm-hmm. you know, it's an action-adventure game with puzzles. I really enjoyed playing this. It puts a smile on my face every time I turn it on. Going through the levels twice was never felt like a burden to me. Even the mm-hmm. stupidly crippled battle system I could overlook because it's just so charming and cute and fun. And they put a lot of love into this game. And it shows that the people that made this game really care. And it's not just a money grab, a cash grab, in the way that Twilight Princess HD is pretty much 100% cash grab. So I love it. I think it's a great game. If you skipped it, I recommend you pick it up. But yeah, I know there were a lot of haters. What can I say?
Well, I haven't played that much Color Splash, but I have enjoyed it. And hearing you say that it's your number one pick of the year makes me feel like I should go back to it sooner rather than later. But I definitely liked what I played.
Excellent.
Well, let's move along to some brief categorical awards, things such as Best Graphics.
Hmm.
Speaking of Paper Mario Color Splash, that would be my pick.
Oh, yeah. I think I would also probably pick that, even though the graphics are so simple.
They are simple, but I love the textures. I love mm-hmm. the way it really feels like corrugated cardboard mm-hmm. or, you know, colored paper. And it just looks amazing, just like they did last year with Yoshi's Woolly World and made these textiles really come to yep. life. They do the same thing with the World of Paper. And I think it just looks really, really, really fantastic in spite of that simplicity. And, you know, when you look at those details, you're like, oh, yeah, this is Nintendo doing a high definition console. You know, it really, really comes through. And I think it looks absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Then the next category would be Best Music.
In my head, what came to mind was Twilight Princess HD, just because they reorchestrated it for the Wii U, didn't they? Or am I crazy?
I didn't know that was the case.
Oh, maybe not.
But it does have some great music. I especially love Midna's Lament. That's one of my all-time favorite Zelda tunes for sure. But I felt guilty putting Twilight Princess HD on my list at all. I feel even more guilty giving it Best Music mm-hmm. for a 10-year-old game. So my pick is Shantae, Half Genie Hero, once again. There are some great tunes on there. It's very toe-tapping. And if you get the physical version of the game, which comes out on Wii U next week, it even comes with a soundtrack CD. So that's an additional incentive to get that version of the game.
Oh, and apparently they didn't remaster the music, so it is the it is the same music as after looking it up. Well, still, it's great music, but wow, all right.
All right, good to know, good to confirm. Best new character. For me, it is Setsuna from Fire Emblem Fates. First of all, I feel very bad that Fire Emblem Fates was not in my top five. It was in my top five until I remembered Axiom Verge exists. And then I had to bump Fire Emblem Fates. Because I spent like 140 hours playing Fire Emblem Fates. And that was only the Birthright version. I didn't even finish the Conquest version or the third version. So, you know, when I get back to it, you know, I'll probably end up putting in like, you know, 300 hours into this whole thing. But I don't want to talk about the game. I want to talk about Setsuna right now, who is this kind of aloof, sort of goofy character who keeps getting caught in traps. That's her shtick. Everywhere she goes, she gets caught in some bizarre trap, a pitfall, or they don't really show it. She just talks about it. So she's kind of clumsy, but she is also completely badass. She is one of my favorite characters to use in battle because she's a super powerful archer, and at least in my game, you know, had really, really great stats and was an expert at killing most enemies almost instantly. So between her clumsiness and her unique personality and the fact that she was a beast on the battlefield, she is my favorite new character of 2016.
All right. I have a pick here. I just want to give Nintendo credit for the most bizarre character in a video game I've seen in years, which is Yamamura, the edamame-eating pigeon in Mario Maker 3DS. Yes, whoever is the genius or insane person that you keep locked up in a cage over at Nintendo who came up with Yamamura, I want to give him credit or her credit. That is just beautiful.
Unfortunately, we have to disqualify that pick since Yamamura is not a new character for 2016. But nonetheless, it sounds great, and I look forward to reading that dialogue when I finally get a chance to sink my teeth into Mario Maker for 3DS. Next up is Best Story. Unsurprisingly, I'm going with Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, Spirit of Justice for this one. As I mentioned earlier, the story is one of the strongest points about the game and the reason it was my number one pick. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that I'm also picking it for Best Story. Although I should also give a shout out to Corpse Party. Corpse Party is a great story in a completely different way. The fact that it is a port of a game that came out on PSP like 3 years ago, you know, kind of threw it out of contention for me, and it's the runner-up to Ace Attorney. But still, yeah, for scares and creepiness, it's an excellent story as well. What about you for story?
Oh, I'm going to abstain. I didn't play nearly.
Oh, but you've played like at least three story-heavy games.
Yeah,
I mean, you've got Paper Mario, you've got Bravely Second, and you've got Mario Luigi. So if you had to pick from those three, which would you go with?
I would have to say Color Splash. I really think that Color Splash had a fun, not quite story, but I think just the dialogue is so fun.
Oh, yeah. I suppose it's more the dialogue than just the story itself.
Yeah,
but
there's not much of a story.
It was a nice return to form, I thought. The past few Paper Mario games really haven't been very strong in the writing department.
Yeah.
And this was really a return to form. So, yeah, it's good to hear you say that it's the best out of those.
Yeah, I got to say, whoever localized this did an amazing job. I don't know what the Japanese was, but it really works for me in every bit of dialogue feels like it was originally written in English. So kudos.
Yeah, Treehouse in top form there. Okay, Best Retro Revival.
Ooh.
This one's kind of an easy, obvious one. It's the NES Classic, of course.
It is the NES Classic.
I mean, it's 30 games in one.
Yeah.
It's almost a gimme, you know?
It's a shame that they just didn't make enough to satisfy the demand for the thing.
It is.
And
it really is.
It was obvious that, you know, the day it came out, we knew that there was just going to be an insanely limited supply of these. So I got to give Nintendo an F for not making nearly enough of these.
Well, that part stinks, but the hardware itself is really cool. I mean, I love the fact that it really is a miniature NES, and you've got, you know, nearly 100% authentic NES controllers, and it's got a great selection of games. So I do wish it were more readily available, but I'm very happy being able to have one and play one. And I would totally go out there and stand in line with you again for a Super NES Classic.
Oh, my
or
gosh.
An NES Classic Volume 2. So
I would be up for both of those things. I think an SNES Classic would just make people lose their minds.
Yeah, totally.
It's got to be something they're thinking about, because if they can finally make enough to meet demand for the NES Classic, there would be just an almost unlimited demand for an SNES Classic, especially with the quality of the games. For just Super Metroid and Super Mario World, it would just be outstanding.
Absolutely.
I just want to honorably mention the Mega Man Legacy Collection. I know it's not super 100% accurate gameplay-wise. I know there's some glitchiness in some of those games, but it's still...
Well, Mega Man 5 had some issues, had that slowdown mm-hmm. problem or frame rate problem mm-hmm. that really sticks in my craw.
But you know, looking past the negatives there, I think it's a really worthy addition to your 3DS collection. It's especially because I think it's only like 20 bucks now, 15 or 20 bucks. So
yeah, you can get it pretty cheap.
That's way cheaper than getting those games individually on the eShop. And you get mm-hmm. a nice package.
It's not perfect, but it's hard for me to complain about more Mega Man. Mm-hmm. So, okay, next category, best amiibo.
Amiibo!
Scott, do you have any opinion on this whatsoever?
Best amiibo, my gosh. I'm going to say worst amiibo is 8-bit Link.
What?
I mean, nobody wants that. Mario works in an 8-bit statue. Link looks like just a pudgy little dwarf.
Well, he is a pudgy little dwarf in 8-bit form, and I love him. Even with that darn inaccurate sword on his back.
All right.
But it is not my pick for the best amiibo.
What is the best?
I think you probably have the best amiibo, actually, because my pick would be Wolf Link.
Oh, really?
Was included with Twilight Princess HD.
Wolf Link.
You did get the physical package,
yeah, I
right?
did. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that one. I mean, it's got Midna, it's got Link, and it's got sort of almost a little diorama base. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very happy. I mean, I like all the Zelda ones. But yeah, I think my favorite amiibo of the year would be Wolf Link, included with Twilight Princess.
Cool.
Our last categorical award would be Best DLC.
What'd you pick?
I'm going with Animal Crossing Welcome Amiibo.
Oh.
Speaking of amiibo.
All right.
You know, that was something that Nintendo totally didn't need to do, but it added a whole lot more functionality to Animal Crossing on the Nintendo 3DS. It gave you a lot more reasons to play the game. Lots of fresh new features. You know, I've got Gan living in my town now. You know, I haven't played it actually in a week or so. He might have taken over by now. I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess it didn't keep me playing quite as long as Nintendo wanted to. But still, I have to give them mad props for, you know, even making this thing mm-hmm. and putting in all these new features and giving me extra reason to be happy that I own these amiibo as well. I'm glad they went the extra mile and put out such a cool new patch for a pretty outdated game that I never would have expected them to do this for.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Big thumbs up for that.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to Nintendo for the updates we've got for Super Mario Maker on Wii U.
I kind of forgot about this.
I don't think anybody expected them to improve the game upon what it was already, but they listened to the community. People wanted to, you know, be able to go through doors and unlock doors with mm-hmm. keys, and I think that added a level of complexity to people's designs, and it made Mario Maker on the 3DS even better.
Yeah, good point.
That was really cool of them to do that for a game that really sold through most of the copies they sold in the first few months of its release, and for them to revisit the game like that and add additional content that people weren't expecting. It was just really, really nice.
Yeah.
So I applaud Nintendo, and I applaud the folks out there who are still making amazing levels that hopefully we'll continue to see well on into the future. I think this is a game for mm-hmm. the ages. I think, believe it or not, I think in 10 years, Super Mario Maker is still going to be a thing where I don't think anything else on the Wii U is going to stand the test of time.
I still would not mind, though, if they added one more patch that added slopes to the mm-hmm. game, though. They add that, and I would call it just about perfect.
Here, here.
So the last thing I want to mention for our 2016 year in review is the Hall of Shame.
I'm afraid. I have so many gripes, I don't know if I can...
Well, there might be gripes here and there, but there are only a few things I think that are worthy
of
the
Hall
of
Shame.
Okay. The first thing that's really annoying to me is My Nintendo.
Oh, yeah, My Nintendo.
And I was like, okay, we don't have Club Nintendo anymore, but okay, we're going to have My Nintendo, and they're still going to give out digital rewards and stuff, and it'll still be kind of cool. But man, it's just been atrocious.
Yeah, the only good thing I can think of is like Zelda Picross, but the fact that I can't...
Well, it started out kind of okay. Yeah. It didn't start out really strong, but there was some cool stuff. There was that. And if you had gold coins, which are the ones you get by actually buying games, mm-hmm. you could occasionally get some free games. Mm-hmm. But now they're not even doing that. So I've got tons of coins stockpiled and pretty much nothing to spend them on because it's like, oh, well, now you can get 30% off some game you already own. Mm-hmm. So it's almost totally useless and definitely not worth my time. It was a huge step backwards from Club Nintendo. So I think they could really step that up.
Yeah, it makes me long for the days of Grill Off with Ultra Hand.
Yeah, this is true. Oh, man, well, we know how good we had it with old Grill Off.
Well, this has been years in the making, but my gosh, Inafune just hoodwinked the heck out of all of us.
Oh, yes.
If anything is a poop sandwich, that whole debacle with the game being delayed and then it never even made it to the 3DS... It's a bad game. The rewards were completely botched through the Kickstarter. Inafune, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you're not going to fool me again. And I'm never backing another Comcept or Inafune game ever again. I'm just really unhappy with the whole thing. What a crap game, and the fact that I'm still waiting for my 3DS version.
What you're saying is that Mighty Number 9 is actually a Mighty Number 2.
You are correct.
Yeah, I mean, this is the other thing that I also had listed for the Hall of Shame for 2016. Yeah, you're right. They completely botched it. I don't think you're ever going to see your 3DS version. I don't think you're ever getting any return on that investment. I don't think I'm ever getting a return on the backer rewards I was supposed to get.
That's right. I was supposed to get a physical reward. I was supposed to get a box. I was supposed to get a box, like a Famicom box for the thing. And that never came.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to see those. Nope. And apparently they didn't spend the money on development because the game came out. I mean, you know, I was defending this game for a long time saying it's not terrible, it's mediocre. Yeah. And while I still stand by that, now that the months have passed and the feeling of getting ripped off has really sunk in, I'm ready, along with everyone else, to just chuck in a feeling off a cliff somewhere.
Yeah, it soured me on Kickstarter for a little while. Of course, then I was right back buying dumb Nintendo books through Kickstarter, but whatever.
Well, so far, I'm 2-1.
Yeah. Shantae was great.
Shantae came out great, and Shovel Knight came out great. Mighty Number 9, not so much.
Yeah. Way Forward and Yacht Club, you are aces in my book, but man, Inafune, boy.
So, Hall of Shame, Inafune. Shame, shame, shame. All right. I think this brings a close to our best and worst, as it were, of 2016. And I guess that means we're going to wrap up this episode. But before we go, there is still time for a dramatic reading. This time from another title included in the NES Classic, an excerpt from the manual of Super C. Sipping cold lemonade with a couple of native lovelies, Mad Dog and Scorpion, guerrilla warriors extraordinaire, relax on a Rio beach and boast of how they destroyed the vile alien warmonger Red Falcon. Little do they know that Red Falcon didn't flee with his pointed tail between his legs. Instead, he tactically retreated to round up ruffians of the universe, friends from all walks of war, to mount a second assault on planet Earth. One of these new recruits is Jagger Freud, a demented alien from the Black Hole Galaxy who dishes out punishment with a laser-sharp tongue. Red Falcon has also shuttled in the Babalu Destructoid Mechanism, a giant alien attack tank which was the primary weapon used to disintegrate the innocent solar system of Tralala. But the genius behind Red Falcon's Earth-conquering concept is his plan to have thousands of intergalactic warriors seep into the brains of the U.S. Army. It's a mind contamination trick which has already taken command of U.S. forces at Fort Firestorm. How do we know that our soldiers have been brain trashed? You can see it in their eyes. Now, if Mad Dog and Scorpion fail to recuperate from their months on the beach in time to destroy Red Falcon's GI fortified hate nest, his sinister scheme will permeate the world's mightiest power, nuclear missile silos included. And if that happens, we'll all be pushing up daisies.
They were paid by word per word there. I'm sure of it.
That was a lot to get through.
That was like word salad.
But you were right. I thought in Super C that you are killing aliens in that first stage, but it actually is humans.
Soldiers. Yeah, humans.
Mind-controlled soldiers that you shoot and they just explode on contact with one bullet. So. I didn't know.
You still think Super C is better than Contra?
Oh, no. I've never thought Super C was better than Contra. You never thought
that. I still think Super C is terrible.
I think Super C is great, and I think it's a worthy inclusion. You're insane to think it's terrible.
I just think it's too hard.
Well, it's hard. It's hard, but...
It's unfortunate. It's too hard.
Still a good game. Ridiculous manual. But
I just don't think it even looks as good as the original Contra.
That's arguable. If we can't have Contra on the NES Classic, Super C, I'd say it is the next best thing.
Why couldn't we? That was Konami's choice, huh?
It's a long story that I cannot get into here.
Why not? You have to tell.
I've been sworn to secrecy.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Anyway, that does it for this week. We'll be off the next week or two due to the holidays and New Year, but after that, we expect to be back to talk about Nintendo once again, and of course, we will have that Shantae code to give away.
Awesome.
In the meantime, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Scott at PlasticBugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella.
Happy New Galaxy Style New Nintendo 3DS XL New Year.
And our special visitor from Videoland, Mother Brain.
I've got a job for you.
We will see you next time.